I've worked with some artists who are sometimes on the calls themselves because they want to know everything that's going on. They want to know how ticketing's working. Is secondary ticketing being used? Is dynamic pricing being used? How's the production going to fit into your venue? What can we swap out as opposed to just leaving it to somebody else downstream to do?
Hey everyone, I'm Katie Traxton and welcome to Anatomy of an Agency, the podcast where we lift the lid on the world of talent agencies. Whether you're looking for representation or already working in the industry, we are here to give you an insight into how things work. Today's guest is a major player in the world of live entertainment, John Langford. John is the Chief Operations Officer of AEG Europe, the company that owns venues like the O2 in London and acts as a promoter for some of the biggest live music acts on the planet. John started his career in radio, but his interactions with agents changed once he moved onto the promotional side of the business.
In radio, I was in contact with agents all the time, but that felt a little bit different to the agents that I got into contact with when I moved on to the promoter side. Just like a different level altogether. And I was needing more from agents as a promoter than I did when I was in radio. I had more power in radio than I had as a promoter. So I guess that's why I think the first real communication was when I needed them more than they needed me.
Oh, interesting. So in radio, they wanted you to give them PR.
Yes.
But as a promoter, you need to get hold of their talent.
Yeah, and in radio, a lot of the DJs that worked for me were represented by agents. But I had the power because we were the employers. So it was agents calling me as opposed to then when I became a promoter, it was me trying to call agents. I won't say calling agents, but trying to call agents.
And how did you get around those agents? How did you get what you wanted out of them?
Well, The thing with an agent is an agent's role is to represent somebody. I mean, that's a pure definition of an agent. So agents shouldn't be operating independently. They're representatives of somebody. So at a point where a buyer and a seller both require something, that's when you get something. But when there's a misbalance between whether what the talent wants or the agent wants or the buyer wants, when that's not balanced, you're not going to get anywhere.
Have you ever known an agent go rogue and not actively represent someone, but you feel like they're doing the deal?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think I've come across it more than a number of times. But I've generally found that a lot of the bigger artists that we deal with are generally well represented by their agencies. And I feel particularly in the last 10 years or so that agencies have become a lot more, I don't want to use the word formal, and I don't want to use the word regulated either, but a lot more responsible in the way that they work.
So I was going to ask whether things have changed over time. How have things changed from the start of your career, if you don't mind revealing roughly when that was, to now?
Well, I mean, I started as a promoter in 2006, so that's, you know, coming up for close on 20 years. Things have changed a lot. You know, it was a real Wild West, you know, 20 years ago. And before I even joined, it was really crazy. Lots of impresarios all over the place. You know, loads of people had come up in the industry through informal routes. You know, they'd been pushing flight cases around and then suddenly they became a manager or an agent and they set up their own business and it was unregulated in a way. But it's become a lot more formal and just pre-COVID, going through COVID. A lot of private equity has moved into the big agencies. It just feels as if there's a lot more of a formal way of working than it was maybe 15, 20 years ago.
Is that a good thing?
Yes and no. It's good because things operate in an expected, predictable way. But it's also not a good thing because you don't have those mad, crazy, rogue impresarios who would take massive risks on things. And, you know, I think society progresses because people take risks.
What do we lose by not having those risks? You say that we lose progress, but what does that look like in terms of the entertainment industry?
It just feels as if a lot of the really big, exciting opportunities are maybe softened a little bit. You know, you don't have someone Live 8, all those really mad, here's a huge idea, let's just do it, or, you know, the big stadium tours, like the big U2 stadium tours. It's like somebody took a huge risk on those kind of things. And it felt like there was a good balance between the artist and a promoter and an agent, like all coming together because there was this exciting opportunity that some crazy person had come up with. It feels that it's a little bit harder to get those things across the line now because, you know, there are lawyers and accountants involved. There's a lot more structure. It just feels that it's not slower. It just takes longer to get to those big moments.
Presumably, you've had the opportunity to see a lot of what goes on behind the scenes. And at AEG, you work with music, you work with sport. Do you see a big difference in how agents and talent operate in those different industries?
Yeah, sport's been developed as an agent world so much more before music. And because music was so rogue for a long time, it didn't work in the formality of the way that sport has worked. But we're definitely seeing that catching up at the moment. And we're seeing a whole lot of new, different kinds of talent kind of being thrown into the pool as well. So the big agencies, the big global agencies, you know, the William Morrises, the CAAs, who always had maybe sports and film and TV and music, are now also getting comedy and podcasts. And it's like there's a whole new world that's kind of coming into it as well. But I guess it helps in a way because you've got those big agencies that have ways of working and a degree of structure which now covers that broad spectrum of the artists and talent that they represent.
Have you ever had a preference between working with those big agencies or working with little agencies, boutiques, independent managers and agents?
I much prefer dealing with the smaller boutique agents, particularly those who've got a small number of clients, because it just feels that they're a lot more dedicated to those clients. But what you'll find in the big agencies as well is that even though it's a big agency, the actual named agent will very often just have a small number of clients. And the benefit they get from the big agencies is they get the cover of the big agency and the support of the big agency, but the smaller agents, the more boutique agents, tend to be more progressive, a lot more agile, they tend to take more risks on big ideas, they tend to be a little bit closer to the talent as well. They also tend to be a little bit closer to the buyer. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not, the buyer is not just a number on a phone that's calling. It's like, oh, it's John calling. So I know John, we've had a relationship. We have, you know, we've walked a path together, and the small boutique agents sometimes need to work a little bit harder as well, which makes them a little bit more intense. Both intense in the way they look after their clients, but intense in the way that they're responsible in their dealings with the buyer.
When you're working with an artist and an agent and you've done the deal and it comes to fruition, as the public, we look on, and honestly in music, I don't have the experience, so I'm asking the question as a member of the public. We go, oh, Taylor Swift's Eras tour, like, hasn't she done an amazing job staging that tour? How much of that is the artist, and I'm sure it differs per person, with the promoter, and how heavily involved is the agent after the deal is done?
It really depends on the artist. And it depends on the size of the tour as well. It also depends on the buyer. So, you know, if it's a big global tour, like, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Taylor Swift, but, you know, Live Nation and AEG very often are buying global tours. So you're buying a 50-date or 100-date tour. And in those instances, because the promoter's investing so much up front, there is a much closer relationship between the promoter and the talent. Of course, the agent and the manager are all involved, but the planning of the tour, the production, everything is really close between the promoter and the talent. But you get most other artists are planning their own 100-day tour with maybe 60 or 70 different promoters and buyers from around the world. In that case, the promoter is a bit more removed from the talent, and the talent is working much closer with their own agent. Their own agent is planning those dates, planning the routing, planning the schedules, planning the production with the management and production team, as opposed to the buyer doing that. So it really does depend a lot on the size of the tour. And then you get some artists that really like to be very detail focused. I mean, I've worked with some artists who are sometimes on the calls themselves because they want to know everything that's going on. They want to know how ticketing's working. Is secondary ticketing being used? Is dynamic pricing being used? You know, what is the production? How's the production going to fit into your venue? What can we swap out as opposed to just leaving it to somebody else downstream to do?
And so I guess if you know the artist, you have that closer relationship, this is probably less relevant. But you said that an agent is your representative. They're your representative in terms of commerce, legal, etc. But how much before you've met the artist is that agent a representative of who they are? Like, how much do you assume that if there's someone playing hardball on the phone, they're probably representing somebody who would approach things in that way? Or do you separate the two?
Again, so much of it is individual. And depending on who the agent is and who the artist is. So some agents don't do the full spectrum of everything. Some will give that to the manager to do. Some will maybe give it else to somebody else in their office to do. Sometimes the promoter does it. So, I mean, there isn't really a one-size-fits-all solution to
so
it.
I get this question all the time. Can you explain the difference between an agent and a manager?
Well, the manager looks after the business affairs of the talent. And that can be everything from, you know, their finances, their investments. On the music side of the industry, it's very often about what their recording strategy is, what the release strategy is, how they work with their record label. Where the agent is more about the touring on the live entertainment side. So it's more about scheduling the tour, planning the tour, and they deal then with the manager and the artist on that specific side of the business. And then if they move into film or TV, sometimes the same agent represents them, sometimes it's a different agent. And then also you get the regional agents as well. So like a really big artist will have an agent that represents North America, and then in North America they'll have somebody that represents them on TV and film. Maybe they're an athlete as well. So they've got like multiple agents, and then when they get to the UK and Europe and the rest of the world, they've maybe got another agent. So it can get quite complicated, particularly with a big artist.
But they just have the one manager?
Not always. Sometimes they can have multiple managers as well, but in most cases it's a single manager. Sometimes they split up what they need from their management. So they may have a financial and investment manager who's slightly different to their manager that looks after their recording contracts. Certainly on the music side, it's a very broad church it's not like sports seems to be a lot more cohesive and a lot more organized and almost fewer agents with a lot more structure to it. Where on the music side, you can have 100 artists with 110 agents looking after them.
I think on the sports side, it's definitely clear like who your person is.
Yeah.
Even if you have a team, you know who the person is who's closest to the artist or the athlete. How did you figure all this out in the first place?
I'm still trying to figure it out. Look, thankfully, my side of the business now means I'm not dealing with as many representatives. But what, you know, when I was a promoter, there was times that you'd get confused because you'd get approached by people too. I think that's the other danger. If I'm trying to book you and I know who you're represented by,
I'm available for a
you're
tour
available
very
for a tour.
Soon.
I know you're represented by a fabulous boutique agency that really looks after you. I kind of you know when you're initiating the conversation, you feel a lot more in control. I think the challenge that there has certainly been in the live entertainment industry is there are lots of fly-by-night representatives who are not formally connected to an artist, but they may approach a promoter or a venue and just say, hey, I'm looking after artist X, they'd be interested in offer. So you've got a selling agent who will basically solicit an offer and then go to the artist's official representatives and say, I've got an offer. And I think that really confuses a lot of people who are not experienced in the industry. And a lot of people get ripped off because of that. You know, there's loads of stories of people who've paid an agent hundreds of thousands in deposit and then the money just disappears. And I think that is worrying, but I feel, at least in the live entertainment side, that it, we're getting better at that.
Well, that definitely happens in sport too. Not necessarily money disappearing, but definitely random third parties inserting themselves in conversations and people not knowing any better.
Yeah.
Because I think people don't necessarily know where to find who someone's agent is.
It's really difficult. I mean, I've done it many times. I've kind of gone, oh, I wonder who the agent is for X. And if you just type it into Google, you're not... You get all kinds of random answers.
And because then, also the reprobates pay more SEO
correct.
Than the real ones.
Yeah. And sometimes even if you go onto the, you know, the big agencies' websites, it's difficult to find a roster. And even if you do get to a roster, sometimes you find that somebody's represented by CAA over here and William Morris over here and UTA over somewhere else. So it can be really difficult to understand who the agent is. Look, it helps when you're with AEG or a Live Nation or an SJM, where you've kind of already built up all of those formal relationships over time, so you can navigate your way through that. But I often feel for people in, you know, developing countries or smaller markets or a new promoter starting out. You kind of think you're speaking to the right person. There's a really good chance that you may not be.
And if I was on the other side of things, if I was a young kid with an amazing gift, tenacity, passion, no idea how the system works, a bunch of guitars as cool as the ones on the wall of this office, like, how do I even start getting hold of a promoter? Do I need an agent? Can I just walk into a small music venue and say, hey, do you want to hear me play?
Yeah, you can. And, you know, the great thing about a lot of small venues is they book direct. And very often... most cases, a lot of artists starting out have booked their own tours and they're managing their own tours. And it's normally only after they've started to get a bit of traction that an agent will walk into the room, watch them playing, and kind of go, well, would you like a representative? But my advice to anybody starting out is, you know, get a second opinion on everything.
You know, including your talent.
Absolutely. Yeah. Don't just listen to mom and dad. If you've been approached by an agent, maybe invite a couple of other agents to come to your show as well. Because I think what I've found over the years is so many young people starting out in the industry get signed up to contracts by agents and managers that are absolutely one-sided. It looks like a good thing. You've been offered what looks like a carrot, and then suddenly you've found that you're locked into a 10-year, 10-album deal, and you absolutely can't go anywhere. So... it's better to shop around if you can. And I know it's much harder because, you know, you're not big yet, so you don't have any power. You don't have the ability to really make demands, but you really should, wherever you can, just get different opinions.
I've seen contracts, this blows people's minds, with commission in perpetuity once you sign it. For both anyone listening, that is not normal.
Yeah, both on the management and the agency side. We see that all the time. And then you've got to try to buy your way out of it. It just gets, it's messy. It's just because, you know, when you're starting out, those athletes or artists, they just don't have any power yet. And get a good lawyer. That's the other thing. Rather spend money on a good lawyer up front who will look after your interests. Because regardless of who the agent or manager is, if you've got a good lawyer looking after you, you'll be protected.
And if I'm a different young kid with a dream, but I want to get into... being a promoter, how do you learn who you can trust and who you can't trust amongst these agents that come to you where they're talking the talk, you don't know the talk yet, you're trying to pitch yourself as their equal? What do you do?
Look, everyone makes a lot of mistakes when they're young, and sometimes those are really expensive mistakes. Look, the best advice I would give is if you can get into a more established business and learn your way up through an established business. It's much, it's got pros and cons, but I think you're gonna lose your house less times if you're working with a more established business than if you start out on your own.
Is there not an opportunity, if you are the maverick, to learn more dynamically and quickly if you go for it on your own?
Yeah,
or is it
sure.
just too dangerous?
No, absolutely. It's just, you're taking more risks, especially, you know, as I said earlier, that the industry has become a lot more structured and organized. And because of that, you're running risks not knowing how the industry works. You're going to make offers. You're going to overpay. I see that all the time. An agent's job is to get the most for their clients. So they will ask for the most that they can get. And so often that doesn't make business sense. And it's going to cost you. And if you're able to absorb that and learn from that, it's expensive schooling and an expensive mistake, but you'll be better for it afterwards.
How did you do it?
Well, I've always worked, thankfully, in formal businesses, so I'm a terrible entrepreneur. I tell anybody happily, I work better in a formal business than I would on my own.
Why is that?
It's just my makeup. I prefer the structure. I prefer to know where I fit in the puzzle rather than trying to make the puzzle myself.
Well, after speaking to John, I certainly feel like we've got a few more pieces of that puzzle. Let's see what Nadia Ali has to say next time. And in the meantime, please get in touch. Contact us at Good Vibes Only Talent on social media or by email gvo@goodvibesonlytalent.com. We want to hear what you think. Thanks so much for listening. And otherwise, from me for now, it is goodbye.